welcome back to the special episode of Exposit Crossroads. For those who are new to the channel, Exposit exists to be a Bible study on Fridays, and I have decided, as this goes on, that the first Monday of every month will be a special episode that will jump aside from the Bible study itself and be more of where theology meets culture, the crossroads where theology meets culture. And I've been sort of battling how I'm going to do this. Am I going to do multiple topics, seeing it's going to be a monthly thing, or am I going to do one big topic? And I have decided, you know, let's keep this to like one big topic that I want to discuss. And you guys can send in suggestions as well throughout, you know, the month of October for what we talk about in November. And so with that being said, this episode is going to be along this premise. I'm going to speak to my people. What I mean by that, I mean Reformed Christians, those who lean towards the Reformed side of the aisle in the Christian world. If you are one of them and you're listening to this, this is going to be sort of a critique, not only at, you know, Reformed people, but not including my, I'm including myself in this, right? But it's also going to be, I'm going to address some things that I struggle with when I say that I'm Reformed. There's a couple things that I really see as some hotbed button issues in the current moment that we are. So I want to set the scene, right? We're 4 days away from a month being a month removed from the Charlie Kirk assassination, right? And I want to put September 10th is a, that's September 10th, 2025 is a, for all pun intended, if you want to, but like, it was a turning point in how I think I personally looked at the world, but I also think it's a turning point in American history and how we looked at, you know, the phrase, you know, what time it is. And the response out of that, from that moment forward over the last month, has been very telling from the different sides within, you know, Christian culture. And so you've had the people who took this and they're using it as an opportunity to launch themselves and their brand. And I think that will fizzle out. I 100% believe that will fizzle out. We'll see through the fake people, I hope. And that grift will eventually die off. It'll lose steam. But then you had the people on the conservative right who, for the term of, they know what time it is, and they recognize the war that we're in. And I think that this moment, the Charlie Kirk assassination, woke up a lot of what we would call normie evangelicals to the reality of the war that we're in. And so then you have the more progressive, what they would call themselves, the third way evangelicals. Now, I'm of the assumption and of the state of mind that third wayism isn't going away. There was a lot of people who who held that belief that this woke everyone up to third wayism, and it's going to no, third wayism is going to be here because you will continue to have your more progressive, you know, evangelifish churchianity type believers who want their ears tickled, who they care more about social justice than biblical justice, and that group is still going to be here. Case in point, when you look at the church in just outside of DC, I can't think of the name of the pastor or the church right now. It used to be the church that David Platt taught at in Washington, D.C. Part of me wants to believe it's called Capitol Hill Baptist Church. But I don't want to be wrong on that. So let me double check that. McLean, that's what it is. McLean, I don't know where Capitol Hill came from, but McLean Baptist Church. There is a Capitol Hill Baptist Church, by the way. So I definitely got that confused. Don't go and say anything negative to them. It is McLean, I think it's McLean Bible Church, where the head pastor there, I can't think of his name right now, you know, used the pulpit, was very soft in his response, you know, said that they did the thing that the left does. Well, we condemn political violence, but Charlie Kirk was a hate monger, right? That's what the left did. Almost as if, well, he brought it to himself. When you preach hate, you'll get hate back, is essentially what they said, right? And I think some people were awakened to that reality within the church, that a lot of the big name evangelical leaders over the last decade or two have either always been a little bit progressive and have sort of kept it covert and we're just now recognizing it, or have been bought off. And a good book to study and to read about this is Megan Basham's Shepherds for Sale. Very good book to talk about how some of these bigger leaders in the evangelical movement are essentially selling themselves out for funding. And so that is an issue, right? So with that in the background, understanding all of that, if you go and watch McLean Bible Church's response, third wayism isn't going away, right? So I'm not one of those that sort of believe that we have this new movement, revival is going to spread, and, you know, the progressives are going to go away. I don't believe that one bit, because there's still a market for that. What I do believe, though, is a revival is starting. And so the topic that I want to address is, when I address the Reformed, is that I'm addressing it from a case that I believe that Reformed believers, and I've held this belief for a while, being Reformed, and I've had the battle with this, of I believe that there are a lot of the Reformed leaders who are a little bit too pious for me. So I want to address this. For example, right, we have this assassination happen. We have the memorial, and there are Reformed believers complaining about the memorial being led by members of people like Chris Tomlin and Phil Wickham and Kerry Jobe and Cody Carnes, who have some ties apparently to Bethel. And I'll say this, you want to test the spirits, because my premise isn't forsake all biblical truth. That's not my premise. My premise is that these are the people that showed up, that God has been calling for decades the Reformed and the pleated khaki sweater vest wearing pastors to get themselves out of the pulpit, right? And guess what? There are plenty of Reformed believers who get on the streets and they do evangelism and they have their ministries. I'm not talking about them. I'm talking in general, right? That the Reformed, these aren't the best people to, Brandon Lake didn't give the best gospel presentation. Okay, well, for many in the building and many of the millions, hundreds of millions watching, that was the first time they ever heard the gospel. Now, I'm not a big fan of Brandon Lake. I'm not. I'm not a big fan of Christian music in general. I'm just going to be honest with you. But through this event, what we noticed is, sure, it was a bad gospel presentation from Brandon Lake. But you know what we saw because they led worship? We saw Robbie McCoy, Charlie Kirk's pastor, start the event, and he gave the gospel. We saw people like Don Jr., Pete Hegseth, Benny Johnson, Tucker Carlson, Tulsi Gabbard, just to name a few. Marco Rubio, probably the greatest example. Frank Torek, probably the best speech. J.D. Vance. We saw people at this memorial clearly give the gospel. 6-7 hours of gospel presentation to a crowd of hundreds of millions, many of which have probably never heard the gospel. And then that Sunday, the Sunday before, the Sunday of the assassination, because the memorial was the Sunday after. So the Sunday so the assassination happened Wednesday the 10th. So the 14th would have been that Sunday. That Sunday, church attendance across the nation skyrocketed. People going to church for the first time. And I posted that entire week from the time of the assassination till that Sunday that pastors had one duty, preach the gospel. Right? Now, there was the silly argument on if they didn't mention Charlie, leave your church. I don't necessarily think we should bind the consciences of pastors to speak, but I do think that a memorial should have been given at some point. I don't think you had to change the sermon. I do think, though, being that this was a Christian martyr, that Christians ought to memorialize and remember the martyrs of the faith. Right, but what I see a lot on social media in the Christian Reformed circles is a lot of piety, especially when it comes out of, we had this tragedy a couple weeks ago at the Mormon church that the guy drove his truck into, lit it on fire, started shooting in the building, and immediately, mostly from the Reformed circle, the response is, well, Mormons aren't Christians. Well, that's not the point. Here's why it's not the point. Because the guy who drove his truck into the building, he probably didn't know there was a difference. He probably did not know that there was a difference between Mormonism and Christianity. We can argue their false cult religion after we mourn with them. Because if all they hear is you're not Christian, they're never going to listen when you give them the gospel, because you didn't sit and mourn with them while they were mourning. Right? And we have this moment right now. We have this moment where it's almost a John 4 moment, and we're studying through John on the Friday episodes, and we'll be in chapter 4 in a couple weeks. We'll be at this section in a couple weeks. There's in John 4, Jesus is had just got done with the woman at the well, and the disciples come back, and Jesus says that he has food to eat, right? And the disciples were saying to one another, no one brought him anything to eat, did he? And Jesus answered, this is verse 34, John 4, 34 is where we're starting. My food is to do the will of him who sent me and accomplish his work. Do not say there are yet 4 months and then comes the harvest. Behold, I say to you, lift up your eyes and look on the fields, for they are white for harvest. Already he who reaps is receiving wages and is gathering fruit for life eternal, so that he may sow, and he who reaps may rejoice together. It's one of these moments where the fields are ripe right now. We have people coming to Christ and coming to churches and hearing the gospel for the first time, and they're responding, and they're and instead of doing anything, I feel like a lot of reformed people, from my experience, I know it's not every single one of them, but from my experience, this piety of trying to find theological correctness as like the standard of whether or not I should care about you as a person. Like no, the Mormon church got shot up. I want to mourn with them so that I can give them the correct gospel. But if I don't mourn with them in their time of need, why would they listen to me? Right? Now we should definitely call out their sin. We should call out their heresy. We should call out their false teaching. But we can get to that once we mourned with them. Right? We can definitely get there and we could say, I love you. I don't support what you believe. But I feel with what you're going through. I'm going to mourn with you because I love you the way Christ loved you. Here's the actual gospel. And we can correct theology after we sit and mourn with them, right? But I also feel that within the reformed ecosystem, and this is just from my experience, that ecosystem values more of the knowledge aspect of the Christian life. And so you'll have $300 conferences, and you'll have people who go to like 4 different conferences a year and pay $1,000 or more for these conferences to learn all this information from all these big pastors. And what I feel is happening, can I speak, is that the reformed people, you've had guys like Steve Lawson and Josh Bice over the last year who have fallen from grace, who have been exposed in their sin for doing different various things. You all can look up their stories. Who were, you know, Steve Lawson was one of the big guys, right? You even, you know, this is a name that, and I've never been a big Tim Keller fan. I've heard his name. I've never really listened to his preaching or read his books. But what I do know about Tim Keller is that he didn't really finish well, from my understanding. You know, he did not handle COVID very well, right? And I don't want to critique the man post-death, but from what I understand is, there was segregation between vaxxed and unvaxxed, masked and masked, and he didn't finish well. In this main cultural area where the world was looking, he became like the world. And I feel like we have a lot of people in that same movement, in that same vein of saying, well, Charlie Kirk was racist and homophobic and he practiced hate when he really didn't. Right, when he really did, right, and rather than, you know, focus on the what is happening in the culture, a lot of the reformed people that I speak to, that I've seen talk, that post on social media, they're up in the clouds. They're discussing theology, which I'm a big fan of, by the way, but none of it is practical discussion. It's always, Well, the Catechism says this, and the London Baptist Confession says this, and the Westminster Confession says this, and we're going to talk about all the ologies and isms and which one's right, and we're going to debate, argue. And in the meantime, the world is watching, and they're saying, well, they don't even love each other. Or the world's watching and they're saying, cool, that's fine. You guys can have your perfect theology. I'm struggling. I'm an unbeliever. I would like to know how to believe and how to come to faith. And I would like to know about this Jesus guy. Can you give me some knowledge? And then you start, and the Reformed, they sort of give this purity test, like, right? And so I whenever someone asks me what denomination I am, I tell them I'm Reformed Baptist. But I said, but I'm not that type of Reformed, right? So one of my favorite podcasters is Keith Foskey, and he has the Your Calvinist podcast, and his little punchline in his intro music is that he's not like most Calvinists, he's nice. And the fact that that can be a joke is kind of, I think a little, it's funny, and I'm not saying it's wrong that he has it in his song. I think the fact that that can be a joke, that most Calvinists, most Reformed people tend to be a little bit angrier, it appears, like if you don't follow their particular belief system. And I've been there. I'm talking about myself. And what I've recognized is that I was so holding on to the tradition of my belief, but I never really was living it out. It was never a practical applied belief. It was just I had this knowledge, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with knowledge. What I'm saying is if you don't apply, right? So for example, Vody Bauckham, who just passed away, was going to speak at, be one of the head speakers at Ligonier Conference in Orlando in April. When Vody died and the unfortunate news that Vody had passed away happened, I emailed Ligonier and said, I would like my money back. I would like my refund. I have, like, first off, here's why. Ligonier is more Presbyterian, and I don't know any of the other speakers. I'm going to be honest with you. Well, that's a half-truth. I know Sinclair Ferguson, and I like Sinclair Ferguson's work. I just have no interest, can I be honest, in spending a week or about a half a week at a conference where no one there I care about. Like, I literally was going to go to listen to Vody. And it was $260. And I think, I'm just going to be completely honest, to spend $260 plus having to then rent a hotel room and pay for gas or plane ticket to get to Florida, I mean, you're looking at over $1,000 to go to a conference. I don't think that this is a rational thing for Christians to do. I can listen to the entire conference on my phone on YouTube. It's going to be aired, streamed live. It's going to be on a delay, but it's going to be streamed. And I think that we do these conferences and we do these debates, and I'm not saying they're wrong. I'm not saying you're in sin for going to them. I personally, for me, I don't get anything out of it by going. And one of my main criticisms is that I'm going to use Ligonier because it's the one I'm talking about. It's in Orlando, right? Orlando is the number one city in the United States, on the East Coast, in LGBT belief, and like of members of that community in a populated city. There's no outreach from this group. Imagine how wonderful it would be if you heard one of these speakers give a message in the morning about the necessity for the gospel to go to the nations. And then in that afternoon, you actually took the gospel to the nations in the city you're in. Imagine Christians from around the world, from around the country, meeting at Ligonier, hearing a beautiful message in the morning, and then going to take the gospel. So, for example, I don't know the name of the conference, but Abolition is Rising. They do a yearly conference on the abolition of abortion. And they always do their conference, and they always go out and serve, right? you're going to hear a message in the morning, and then you're serving the rest of the day. You're going out and you're actually applying what you're learning on the streets, trying to save lives. And so they're one of the good conferences that I appreciate, and I'm fine paying money to do that, right? I am 100%. But what I'm not the biggest fan of is people who tend to be, there tends to be a little bit of an elitism within the Reformed circle, and I personally don't fit that. I feel like a lot of the thought leaders in the Reformed world are a little bit more on an elevated elite status, that they don't tend to see the common people. And if you don't speak Greek, and if you don't speak, for example, R.C. Sproul, great teacher, but he always, whenever he teaches, he always started speaking the Latin. And I think going back to the original languages are great. But you can't expect everyone to understand when you go back and you start speaking the Latin. To some people, it's going to go over their heads. And some people want teaching that goes over their heads. I personally don't. I don't learn anything, therefore I find it useless. But my biggest thing here is that we're so pious, we need correct theology, and I'm all for you there, right? We got to test the spirits, we have to go for the truth. But I feel a lot of times in effort to get the truth, we don't leave room for the spirit to move. And to me, the lack of evangelical effort that I see at some of these conferences, I see a lot of people who, and I can't speak for all of them, I don't know a lot of these people in personal life, but from my eyes, the way that I see them, they're always on Twitter, they're always arguing, and I don't ever see or hear of these people on the streets trying to bring, talking to people. And it doesn't have to be like on the streets mission work, holding up signs and on a microphone, but how many people just in your daily life do you give the gospel to? Do you talk about these things with? Me personally, this podcast is sort of my ministry. And that's why I'm posting it on YouTube, and my hope is, along with other people who do things like this, that it does spread around the world, and we can eventually have a world where YouTube is, people are watching YouTube, learning about and praising Christ and studying the scriptures. I feel like there's this piety within the Reformed world, and so there was a statement made by Pastor Mark Driscoll, and no matter how you feel about that name, if you've been in the faith for a while, that may have made you cringe. If you're new to the faith, go look it up. What I will advise you not to do is do not listen to the podcast "The Rise and Fall of Mars Hill," by the Gospel Coalition, Mike Cosper. It is heavily biased against Reformed theology and against conservative beliefs. The Gospel Coalition and a lot of these, the bigger names at the top there, Mike Cosper being one of them, or one of the people that I said are either have been sort of, have infiltrated the progressive, or are infiltrated Gospel Coalition as a progressive, or being bought off. And that's the only name I'll mention. The Gospel Coalition is one of those where I used to love listening to some of their resources. And I don't mean Gospel Coalition. I mean, they are one of them, but Mike Cosper doesn't work for Gospel Coalition. He works for Christianity Today. They're the one who, both groups, the Gospel Coalition and Christianity Today, started for good purposes. There are still good people at both of these institutions. But a lot of the big top guys who make decisions, questionable things are happening, right? And again, read Meg Basham's book, Shepherds for Sale. But my whole point of this is Mark Driscoll made this post, and no matter how you feel about the name Mark Driscoll, he made a post that and he went on Charlie Kirk's show and he said that the gospel is being presented and has been handed over to, it passed over the pulpit because it didn't do its job. It didn't protect the sheep from the progressive movement and the Marxist movement of the LGBT and the BLMs and through COVID. It didn't do its job. And so God has passed over the pulpit and has given the gospel into the hands of politicians, of influencers, of podcasters, of the people we didn't think God would use to work. And that's who he's given it to, because the fields are ready and there were no workers to show up from the pleated khaki sweater vest wearing crowd. So now he's giving it to the people who they may not look the way a Christian should look. They may be tatted from head to toe. They may not look Christian the way you would think of Christian. They may have on some raggedy clothes. They may not be the richest or the most upkept, but the gospel's being handed to them, and we may not like that the gospel's being handed to churches that are a little bit Big Eva and they worship in the worship concert. Even me myself, right? I would not choose to give the message to people who, you know, I've even had to work through my own piety and how pious I am, and thinking that I'm better than some of these churches who worship like it's a rock concert. Now, I'm not saying that every church should be seeker friendly. That movement, that's that third wayism, but we have a group in the middle who's just a bunch of normie Christians who come together to listen to Forrest Frank and Chris Tomlin and Brandon Lake. And sure, it may not be the most theologically rich, and they may be young Christians, they may be new Christians, but a lot of them have a zeal to get the gospel to the world that the old heads in the back who are still arguing, you know, over, you know, different theological systems, who are missing the moment right now, who don't recognize what time it is. That I always want to go back to that. We have a mission right now. We have a short window of time before the persecution ups itself, right? Because the world's not going to settle down. I see, that's where, as much as I love my post-trib, post-millennial brethren, I'm post-trib, so I don't, but my post-millennial, you know, the Doug Wilsons, the Jeff Durbins, the James Whites, I love these guys, right? But they have this idea of like a Christianizing of the nations. And a lot of them right now are like, we told you there's a revival. As much as I love that thought, I do have thoughts about this. I think a lot of what we're seeing is a lot of people who the gospel's being planted on rocky ground. And it sprouted forth some fruit. It has. But when the wolves come, or when the eagle comes to, it's going to scrape up the roots, and it's going, I think there's a lot of people in this movement that have because of Charlie Kirk in the last month have come to church, have heard the gospel. Some of them, and I'm not here to judge who's legitimately saved or not. That's not for me to judge. But I don't believe that we have revival happening right now. What I believe is we have a moment, and we have the Spirit has given us this opportunity to repent as a nation, and to maybe course correct, and to give the gospel to the world. And I think that after a little time, that persecution meter is going to turn back up. As we get more bold with the gospel, the world's going to get even just as bold with its persecution of Christians. And I've been saying this for several years, And it really started with, what was his name? There was a man in there was a street preacher in Arizona. Who a couple years ago was shot. Hans Schmidt, that's what it is, in Glendale, Arizona, November 2023, so about 2 years ago, was street preaching. He was the outreach director at Victory Chapel in Phoenix. And he was street preaching, and he got shot in the head and was rushed to the hospital. They found the bullet in his head, and they don't know even, like, it was a miracle he survived. And he was in a coma for several months. And within 2 months from the, 2 months after the shooting, he went home. Like, not fully recovered, but, like, he was going home. And he, like, ever since that moment, I've been saying the time in which it is legal and we are free to worship as Christians will be coming to an end. I don't know when. I don't know when that's going to happen, how it's going to happen, what the mode of that will happen. I have no idea. But what I do know is that Christians in America, wake up. Persecution's about to ramp up. And that is when I believe we're going to have a great falling away. That there's going to be some people who can't take the heat. And so that's why I've said since the Charlie Kirk assassination, we have work to do. Because we got new people coming in, and we have to get them ready. We gotta make them aware. Persecution's coming. What happened to Charlie can happen to any of us. And we should expect that is what would happen to us. Now, we shouldn't walk into a situation telling someone to martyr us, but we should be prepared to be martyred if that's the call that God has led us to, right? And so I just, this has been all over the place. It's a bit of a, you know, unorganized episode, but the call that I really would just, especially the reformed people, is to lay down your piety, and I'm speaking to myself, and this is something I've had to learn, is to lay down your piety. You're not smarter than anyone else, and even if you are, who cares? Share the gospel. We're not called to convince someone of a theological system. We're called to make disciples. We're not called to change someone's mind on whether infant baptism is biblical or not. It's fun to talk about. But we have a mission right now, and that mission should be the fields are white, they're ready, but the workers are few. And then what does Christ do? I believe that's in the book, in the Gospel of Matthew. He says that the fields are ready, but the workers are few. And what does he then tell his disciples? What does he then tell his disciples? Fields are ready. Workers are few. Does he say, go out and hope God finds some workers? No. That's, someone else will be called, right? I can't tell you how many times I've even said that. Where oh, I'm not qualified for that. God will send someone else who's better at that. I've said that about this podcast. Every time I thought about doing it, I would record an episode. I would hate how it sounded. And then I would say, you know what? I'm not qualified for this. And so that's why I'm surprised, honestly, that Exposit has made it this far. Matthew 9, that's why I was looking. So Matthew 9, just real quick, Jesus is speaking to his disciples, and he's doing all these miracles, and he actually has just called Matthew, the tax collector. He's in the group. They're doing some healing, and they're going through the villages, and Jesus says, as they're going through these villages, and we'll start in verse 30, in chapter 9, verse 35, Jesus going through all the cities and villages, teaching in their synagogues and proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom and healing every kind of disease and every kind of sickness. Seeing the people, he felt compassion for them because they were distressed and dispirited like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Listen to what he commands them. Therefore, beseech the Lord of the harvest to send out workers into the harvest. He's saying, hey, look, the harvest is ready and it's plentiful. It's ready to be, you know, picked and reaped, but there are few workers. So go beseech God, right? But look how verse 10 or chapter 10 starts, excuse me. Jesus summoned his 12 disciples and gave them authority over unclean spirits to cast them out and to heal every kind of disease and every kind of sickness. Right? What's the answer? What's being said here? Go search the Lord. You know, they're going through all the villages and he's having compassion and he's saying, the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Go ask God, the Lord, to send out workers into the harvest. And guess what? That prayer, God answered. You know who the workers are? They were the disciples. Jesus then sent out his disciples to do the harvesting. Guys, we have a moment right now where the harvest is plentiful. And God is telling you and me and everyone listening to my words right now, go to work. We got a harvest to reap. Right, that's exactly right. And what's interesting in this chapter is he sends them out, and he tells them how, you know, preach the gospel of the kingdom, heal the sick, and do all these things. And they went and they did them. But Jesus didn't say, man, I wish that there were more workers. No, he said, you're my workers. If you're in Christ, right? The Great Commission isn't just for missionaries. It isn't just for preachers to go and preach. No. The Great Commission is for all of us in our jobs, in our workplaces, in our families, in our houses, at Thanksgiving, wherever it is, preach the gospel. In truth and in love. Don't be offensive. The gospel is offensive enough. Don't be a jerk. But preach the gospel. We can worry about getting new believers from milk to meat in the future. And I'm not sitting here saying don't worry about theology, because I do think that's important. But the Great Commission wasn't go make disciples of Calvinism, go make disciples Reformed. No, it's go make disciples of all nations, teaching them what has been taught to you. Convert them to the image of Christ, not your Reformed systematic theology, not your covenant theology, not your dispensational theology. You're not making converts to your system. You're making converts to Christ. You're not trying to make them conservative. You're not trying to make them liberal. You're trying to make them Christian. Right? And so, that I don't know. I don't know if this is, was even beneficial, but I think this was important. I hope it blessed whoever listened to this. Leave your thoughts and comments in the comment section, and thank you all for listening. I will see you all on Friday as we continue the Bible study in the Gospel of John. We will finish chapter 3, so verses 22 through 36. And so that is where we will be. Thank you all again for listening. I'm Randall, your host. This is the Exposit Crossroads podcast. Thank you all for listening, and I will see you all on the next episode.